to the 56th episode of the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast, a podcast where we talk about games and gaming from a feminist perspective. My name is Samantha Blackman, and I'm an associate professor here at Purdue University in wonderful West Lafayette, Indiana, where I teach about, write about, talk about, argue about lots of things, but not limited to video games, video games, video games. And I am joined tonight, as in every podcast night, by my two co-hosts, Alex Lane and Nicole Marie. Ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Alex Lane. I'm a PhD candidate at Purdue. Going up on my last year of my program, which is exciting. And I am working on my dissertation, which is about women in the video game industry and that relation to policy. So, yeah.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! And I'm a bachelorette this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Living my life.
That's right.
And I'm Nicole Marie, and I am the... I don't know, video game nut who is looking for a job in the video game industry. So hire me.
Speaking of which, are you part of the Women in Games job group on LinkedIn? Because they post jobs there like every day.
I am. And you know what? Most of them are for artist positions. Whenever I see them, most of them are for artist positions.
Well, anybody else who's listening who's interested in that, check it out.
Yeah, definitely check it out. There are a lot of good sites. I recently found one called Names and Games. And it's basically just a place for people who are in the video game industry to kind of connect with each other. But then for me, it's like this great place to kind of be like, hey, here I am. Hire me.
I like it.
So yeah, that's us.
Awesome. Okay. So what we'll do is our usual thing, which is what you're playing, what you're reading, what you're drinking. And since Alex Lane is a bachelorette this weekend because her husband's out of town, she better be drinking. If she's not, she better be drinking by the time we get to the what you're drinking section.
Oh my gosh, it's a good thing that I'm on a laptop. Hold on. Well, actually, I gotta let them out. I got these crazy dogs running around like nutcases. I gotta let them out in a second. So I'll go first and then run away quick.
Okay, Alex Lane, what you playing?
I've been playing a lot of see what I'm saying? A lot of kind of the same games that I've been playing, but with a few little twists and so forth. So my top couple games that I've been playing are Gourmet Ranch, which I think I was playing last time. Maybe not. Gourmet Ranch, it's a Facebook game. It's kind of fun. It's dumb. It's like all the other Facebook games. I'm also playing Plants vs. Zombies Adventures, which is in beta right now. And that is actually really, really good. I loved the regular Plants vs. Zombie. I was obsessed with it till I beat it. And this one, like, melds together that with, like, building up your own little town. And I think they did a really great job. I've been enjoying it a lot.
How much money have you spent on it?
I haven't spent any money yet. Because I was getting really frustrated because at first you don't have enough cash to do anything. You don't have enough coins to, like, plant any of the stuff. And then, like, if you don't have a lot of friends, you have to pay cash, like, your little cash things for positions to fill them. And so I was getting frustrated because I didn't have enough cash. But, like, right now, I don't have good enough plants to win all my battles. So now I'm just, like, stocking up on cash and coins. So I'm doing great right now. Not that I'm against spending money. I will. I do it all the time. I'm not scared of that. I've been playing some WoW, some pet battles. And then the two new games I played this week are Naruto Powerful Shippuden on the 3DS. I don't know how to say that. And the Epic Mickey Power of Illusion on the 3DS. And I, as a hater of Epic Mickey, like dire to my core hater, I really liked it on the 3DS. You haven't played it yet, right, Sam?
No, not on the 3DS. I played it on the 360 and hated it.
Yeah, I hated it too. But it makes sense on the 3DS, because what happens is you, like, go through the levels and stuff, right? And then you, like, with your whatevers, and then you use your stylus to draw on the thing. So, like, it actually makes sense, like, as a game, because you're using your stylus to, like, trace lines, and you, like, get points for tracing it well, and then you, like, go through the story like a regular game. So I thought the mechanics were pretty good, and I kind of enjoyed it and I'm a 100% hater of that. So I actually, yeah, I got the demo and then was so sucked in, I bought it. So, yeah.
That's interesting. Maybe I'll check it out for P.
Yeah, I mean, they have the demo on there that goes pretty far, so check it out.
Yay. Cool. Nicole, what you playing?
Oh, man, I'm next. So somebody posted something on Facebook that got me, like, so excited that they have the original Sonic game, like, for the Sega Genesis on the iPad. So I'm like, oh, cool, I'm going to check it out. And I thought it would be free and all this cool stuff. But it's $2.99, so I downloaded it anyways. And let me tell you, like, I spent my whole weekend playing Sega. Like, my boyfriend was in town, and we were just passing the iPad back and forth, and it's total nostalgia, because I just, like, I think that was probably the first video game that I ever truly, really got into when I was really little, so that's cool. I'm still playing it, because you can play, you go through each playthrough, and you can play, when you get through the whole game as Sonic, it unlocks Tails, and then when you play the whole thing as Tails, you unlock Knuckles. So I'm on Tails right now. I'm trying to get to Knuckles. Minecraft is still sucking my soul away, so I'm still playing that. The cool thing is I've been finding a lot of diamonds, and that's, like, the most exciting part about this game is when you find the diamonds. But now that I have all these diamonds, I don't know what to do, so I think I'm slowing down on it. Like, the excitement is slowly fading. And then, because my boyfriend was here this weekend, he's, like, really, 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 really into Candy Crush. Isn't that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Candy Crush Saga or whatever. He's super into it, and so I've started playing that just because watching him play, I'm like, oh, okay, I should try this game out finally. I'm so behind on those trends. Like, the games that are super popular, I'm always, like, a month behind. I'm like, oh, I'll jump on this train.
Why are you so behind?
I just feel like everyone's been playing. Like, I feel like you and Alex talked about it, like, months ago.
Yeah, we probably did.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm...
Because I'm playing right this second, and I'm on, like, level 100 and something.
Yeah, he's on 90-something. And I know, like, a lot of the ladies I work with who are the whole, like, you know, they're older, not, like a lot older. They're in their mid to late
30s.
I meant like late 30s, early 40s is what I was really looking for. Like, they have kids and
you're not making it any better.
Well, they are older than her.
They're older than me. But so they have this whole, like, mindset that they're still in this gap where video games are not, like, a thing that their generation did. You know what I mean? And so it's funny to me that they tease me all the time for playing video games. And when I was talking to them about C2E2, they were like, oh yeah, but all the guys there live in their parents' basements and they're never gonna have a future in life and blah blah blah. Like, they have that mindset, but they all play Candy Crush, and it just cracks me up because it's like, you guys are gamers and you don't even realize it. Like, you're gaming. That's gaming. But oh. So I'm behind.
And that, my friends, was the last time Nicole was ever heard on the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast, when she said that the 30-somethings and early 40s were geriatric.
I just meant they're older than me. I don't have kids. I'm not married. We're at different life stages. How about that? Does that work? they're in a more advanced life stage than I am.
Advanced. That's not better. That's not better.
That's worse.
Oh, God. That's funny. I'm, like, getting teared up over here. Oh, God. So, Candy Crush. Yeah.
I guess I'll go get my walker right about now. Yeah. Jeez.
You need a hearing aid, too.
I guess I do. Shit.
Oh, man.
Anyway, I guess it's my turn. Since I'm really old, I can say I'm playing Candy Crush.
It's allowed.
Also, yeah, of course, anybody who knows me knows this. Still playing Ni No Kuni.
Oh, man.
Still playing Ni No Kuni. We'll probably never stop.
I'm just glad that you finally have a game you like enough to play it every week, because you constantly give everyone else shit for playing these games week after week that they love, man.
I want to stop playing this game. I don't want to play this game anymore. in many ways, I wish this game would just like stop playing in my PlayStation, because then I'd have an excuse not to play it. It's not me. It's the Wii one. Anyway, so yes, we're still playing Ni No Kuni, because regardless of whatever else we do, even when I think that we're going good on something else, I'll turn around and one day she'll say, Mom, can we play a game tonight? And I'm like, yeah, what do you want to play? Do you want to play Bubble Guppies? Do you want to play, you know, Sesame Street? Do you want to play? I want to play Ni No Kuni. Dun, da, da! And that's the way it always goes.
That's so funny.
So, yeah, I wish Ni No Kuni would go away, because we are way over 100 hours in. And if I never played that damn game again, I'd be happy. But the new game that we started, I think I may have talked about it last time. If not, I definitely posted about it. We're playing Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, for the Wii, but we're playing it on the Wii U, which is probably the most, action my Wii U has gotten probably since I bought the damn thing damn near. Yeah, we're gonna try to make sure this one doesn't go the way of the Wii. We're really gonna try to make sure it doesn't become a fancy doorstop. But we got new games coming out. Hopefully with, you know, the Lego Marvel Heroes coming out, it'll be much better than Lego Lord of the Rings was. And I'll be able to put some serious time into playing that for a while, because the Lego games had gotten really good. And I've enjoyed them for a long time, even since like the early Lego Star Wars and Indiana Jones games, all those. I played those and had a blast with them. But Lord of the Rings just did not do it for me. But so we'll see what happens with Marvel Heroes. What else? I finally found my copy of Professor Layton and the Miracle Mask. Yay!
Woohoo! I've heard it's really good. Are you enjoying it?
I am enjoying it thoroughly. But I am a huge Professor Layton fan.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one's a really good one. So I've kind of been playing more stuff on my 3DS. I dusted that off a bit, because that, and I don't know if we talked about this since I have been playing that, but I have been playing Luigi's Mansion on the 3DS as well. And that was a lot of fun. So I'm going back and forth between Luigi's Mansion and Professor Layton on a 3DS right now. And of course, next week, oh my God, there is only one thing I am going to be playing on my 3DS for a really long time after next week, and that is Animal Crossing. I'm telling you, it's so bad that I was tempted to buy a 3DS XL just so that I had an extra 3DS that I could commit solely to Animal Crossing.
That's so funny.
I have a Jones that is so bad when it comes to Animal Crossing. I could not even explain to you. I thought I was going to break the 3DS when I was playing Animal Crossing the first time, because I used to play it every night when I went to bed. And I would fall asleep playing it every night, and my DS would hit the floor. So I was pretty sure it was just going to break. That's why I ended up putting one of those big-ass bulky Nerf covers on it, because I was pretty sure it was going to break.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're going to be away at a conference when Animal Crossing comes out next week, but we've already planned to make a midnight run to, like, the local Target or Walmart or whatever the hell it is to get our copies, just so we don't miss out. And let's just hope that I don't, in the meantime and in between time, accidentally pick up a 3DS XL.
Yeah, accidentally.
Accidentally.
Oops.
Oops. It fell in my cart. And Alex Lane is going to be there, and she's no damn good at helping me control my poor, helping me with my poor impulse control.
That's Listen, if you true. Need someone to help you control yourself, then I am not your friend. Get a different friend. I'm
Get
not
a
that
different friend.
Yeah. I can't help anybody control anything.
She's not lying. What else? Oh, I also played Papers, Please. Has anybody else played this?
No, I've never even heard of it.
It's a downloadable game for PC, and I don't know if it's for what you call it, Mac as well. But it's kind of a serious game. And what you are is you're playing this Eastern European, they call it a dystopian document thriller. And you're in Erstroitska. And you're in the middle of like the Cold War, but you play a border control person, right? So you're checking papers. That's why it's called Papers, Please, at the border. And so what happens is like, you have to check papers and you have to like look at the person, make sure it matches with the passport picture. You have to, there's a set of rules. Like if they're from Erstroika, then all they need is their entry ticket and their passport. But if they're from a different country, they need their passport and they can only be from certain issuing regions and they may need different papers to go along with it. But then like weird shit will start happening. Like a bomb will go off in the processing center and you'll see like other little people get blown to bits. And then it'll say, oh, well, you know, because of the recent terrorist activities, new restrictions are in place. And then they'll just give you a whole new fucking set of rules. And then you have to follow those rules. Right. And you get paid by the number of people you process through every day. But then at the same time, you have to keep up with these rules, because if you don't, if you start letting people through that don't match, you'll get a warning and then they'll fire your ass. Right. So you have to kind of keep some kind of balance, but you get paid by the number of people. The amount you get paid is based on the number of people you let through. And then at the end of every workday, you have a family to feed. So it becomes like Oregon Trail at this point. Right. So, you know, you have to, no matter what, pay like $20 for rent. But then you might need $10 for food and $15 for medicine because Uncle Joe or whoever the hell it is that's also living in your house is sick, or your kid is sick. Then you have to pay for heat. So you have to decide what days they're going to go cold, what days they're going to go hungry, what days they're going to be sick and just be real sick, and who's eventually going to die off, all this kind of stuff. Right. So it's a serious game. I'm laughing. That shit's not funny.
Yeah. This game sounds super,
oh my
God, intense.
It's horrible. I sat there and I played that game for, like 3 hours in Einstein Brothers one day. It was crazy. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So Papers, Please. Like I said, it's called a dystopian document thriller. And it's a game that's created by Lucas Pope. So you can find it at Dukope, DUKOPE.com. Check it out. For Windows and Mac. It was actually, like I said, it's thought-provoking to say the very least. I've been playing some Gourmet Ranch because Alex Lane told me I had to. Yep. Because she started playing Plants vs. Zombies Adventures with me, so I had to play Gourmet Ranch with her. And it's actually, you know, a lot like those other, you know, Facebook diner-y type of games that kind of suck you in after a while. So, not too bad. And that's about all I think I've been playing. Yeah.
Gotta think about it.
I had to think about it. I had rented Resident Evil 6 for the 360 because it came out. The 360 port came out. And since I have it already for the 3DS, I was like, oh, I'm just going to rent it and play it for a little bit and see how I like it. I walked around it with it in my bag for like 5 days and I was like, okay, I've been paying for this game for like 5 days. I'm just going to go ahead and return it because obviously I'm not going to play it. So I never got around to playing that. Not that you wanted to know that, but you know, hey. All right. Next up, what you reading? Anybody reading anything fun?
Nothing. Nothing fun, that's for sure. TPS reports.
I don't know what those are and that doesn't sound fun.
It was a Office Space joke.
Oh, see, I never watched Office Space.
Oh, you should see it. It's so good. It's good to laugh at.
I'm sorry. Alex Lane, are you with us or are you lost in the ether?
I'm here, but I only catch about every fifth word. I'm testing my online speed right now, and it is 0.03.
Oh, wow, that's really low. That's
megabytes per second. Oh, no, the final was 0.19 megabytes per second, so I don't know what's going on with my internet, so I'm sorry.
You need a new modem just tomorrow.
I just got one.
Oh, well, I don't know what the fuck's wrong with you then.
Like 2 months ago. Yeah.
I'd still take it up there and tell them you need a new one.
I might. I might. But anyway, so what are we on?
What you reading?
So I'm not, I don't think I'm reading anything game book related right now. but I did just get, I just interlibrary loaned the big, gamification book, the gamification of learning. And, I get to go pick that up tomorrow. So I will have an update soon on that. It looks really terrible, so I'm very, very excited.
So I have low hopes.
Yeah, exactly.
I was wondering why you interlibrary loaned it instead of buying it, and that explains it.
That's the first book I've ever interlibrary loaned. If I ever wanted it bad enough to interlibrary loan, I'd just buy it. But I did not want to buy it, and it was expensive. So so I don't really have much for you on that front, but yeah, me.
Okay. Well, let's see. I've been reading a lot of crap. I don't know what it is, though. The latest book I'm reading, though, is what that'll be an easier one, is I'm reading a book on writing for the... I've been thinking a lot about writing for games, writing in games, writing in games, writing about games. That's what I want to say. And I've been reading a lot about it, and there's not a whole, for everybody out there who knows this, right? There's not a lot about writing outside of narrative writing that's like out and published. So what I've been reading is actually like the one book that kept popping up whenever I was kind of like talking to folks about it and looking around and seeing what was out. But it is, Dan Amrich's book, Critical Path, How to Review Video Games for a Living. And it's actually been a really fun read, right? Cause it's one of those things like, okay, here's what your life's going to be like. If you're a games journalist, if you're writing for games, you're going to write a whole lot, a long time for free. Cause you got to get your name out there. It's what you got to do. Right. So you're going to work for free and then you're going to work for nothing, for close to nothing. If you think you're going to get rich off this, it's never going to happen. And then you may get that dream job, but you're still not going to get rich, and here's what life is like. So he starts out the book like that. Like, and then when he gets to like the end of that section, he's like, okay, so now if you're really ready to read how to write and review video games for a living, let's talk about how to do this. So if you're still there, right. It's a whole lot of fun to read. I think it would be a blast to use in a class because, it's kind of an eye opener on top of a, a how to book. It's called Critical Path, How to Review Video Games for a Living. I'm about halfway through it. I'll probably finish it. Not tomorrow before the weekend's out. But then maybe not, because I still got a whole lot of dissertation chapters to read. Thanks to Alex Lane and other people. Yeah. But yeah, I got it. It's a lot of fun. I picked up an ungodly number. Well, not ungodly for most folks, but probably a good 8 or 10 new books on the Kindle, like in the last week. And most of them have been about games, but so I've read bits and pieces of them all. But Critical Path is the one I'm reading through first because, that was the one I wanted to read through first. That's what I'm reading. What you drinking is the most Woo-hoo. Important question.
I heard that question.
The one question that comes through.
I went and got something. I had a martini earlier, and I'm contemplating another martini, but I found lately that my martini to sleep ratio is about 2 to 1. So if I had one more martini by the time we were done podcasting, I'd be sleeping. But yesterday, I went and I had my disc golf league. Because believe it or not, the week before, I actually got someone beat me. So I was very upset.
What are you doing with your life?
I don't like to lose, okay, at all. Small as that is enough. Okay, so I do not like to lose. And so this girl took my tag last week because you play for tags, like numbers, and you try to get the lowest number. Mm-hmm. And so I was like determined, like I was talking to you guys yesterday. I'm like, I'm not drinking. I'm not going to have a sip of alcohol because I am going to go. And I'm going to win this golf thing. And I did. Anyway, so I was out all day. I was super hot, and I just felt like something I could, like, chug, but not beer, something that was kind of sweet. So I got some Lynchburg lemonades.
Ooh.
Have you ever had those?
Oh, yeah. I love those.
My mom used to drink them. Yeah, I've never really had one before. It was out of my repertoire for what I normally drink, since I usually drink straight vodka or scotch. But it was they're kind of good. They're real easy to drink. So.
Oh, yeah.
I went and got one of those.
Lemonade-y kind of beverage with sour mash whiskey. There's nothing better, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah, I suppose it has whiskey. Oh, God, I'm an idiot. I didn't even think about that.
That's why it's called a Lynchburg lemonade, because Lynchburg is where they make Jack Daniels.
Yeah, I get it now. It also says Jack Daniels on the top, so that could have given it away, but...
It could have. Just maybe.
Yeah, a little. Anywho, that's what I'm drinking.
Nicole, are you drinking?
I have.
That's someone else's dog, by the way, not mine.
Oh, yeah, that's someone must be home. She only barks like that when someone walks through the door. I am drinking Angry Orchard Hard Cider.
Nice.
Again, I feel like I've drank that before, but it's really good, and like I said, my sister can drink it because of her celiac, so we drink it together so she doesn't feel left out.
Aww.
Yep. I'm nice like that, you know.
yes,
take one for
are.
The team.
Yeah.
I am drinking... That time of year again.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Firefly?
A sneaky, sneaky.
Oh, sneaky. Shoot. Love a sneaky, sneaky.
When I was out shopping, I walked past like the liquor aisle and I was like, Firefly, where have you been for months? So I grabbed a bottle. And yes, tonight I am drinking a sneaky, sneaky.
Oh, shoot. Fun.
Summer is officially here. Summer can't start till I have my first sneaky, sneaky.
Yeah, that's for sure. That definitely sounds like summer now.
Yep. So now I am definitely a happy summer dweller.
It's officially summer.
It's officially summer. Because the sneaky, sneakies have started. And since I have not had dinner and I'm drinking on an empty stomach, I may be drunk by the time the end of the podcast ends.
And Sam's drunk.
Not a hard thing. All right. News.
Woo-hoo. What you got? You know what? Nothing too exciting because most sites are really just covering more news about, Xbox One or PS4 or what's going to happen at E3.
Mm-hmm.
But I found this to be extremely ridiculously exciting. EA is taking away the online passes, like retroactively eliminating online passes for their games. Like, I
don't get it.
For some reason, that's crazy to me. The fact that they're, like, getting rid of them. What's their game here? Are they trying to boost?
What does that mean?
Well, you know how... Okay, so if you buy a used EA game, you can't play it online unless you buy a $10 online pass.
Well, that makes sense, though. That went away because Microsoft and Sony both are going to do that on their own.
Yeah, so they're retroactively eliminating it. So, like, they're getting they're not just, like, stopping it. They're removing it for all the games that it was on before, which kind of shocked me. I mean, I get it for, like, the next generation of consoles, but they're doing it for right now. And they're starting with their sports games. So that's kind of cool.
Maybe they're trying to build goodwill and hope that people don't...
That's what I think.
Good fucking luck, man.
Yeah, they're trying to build goodwill, and for one, because, you know, they've had their other, and they can't afford any more ill will.
No, they can't. You know what's funny is I found a job as a QA with them, and I just can't bring myself to apply for it. Like, that could be my end to the video game industry, but do I really want it to be with EA?
Come on,
really?
You can make EA better.
Oh man.
There you go. That yeah. They definitely need QA, folks.
Yeah. So, and then my other little piece of news, because I feel like we talk about Double Fine a lot, because I feel like, Sam, at least you play a lot of their games.
Mm-hmm.
But they're announcing a new game tomorrow, or today, if we get this up today, tomorrow, and you're listening to it, if that makes sense. If it's the 31st while you're listening to this, it's today, or it may have already happened. But it's kind of interesting that they're announcing a new game, even though they have, like, four other projects going on, including two that were on Kickstarter recently.
Yeah, that's pretty strange, isn't it?
Yeah. But, I mean, a lot of people are excited about it because their Kickstarter projects that they have up are look phenomenal for the people who are excited for them.
Oh, my God, I wish Broken Age would come out already.
Yeah, like, that's the only one that I'm really excited for. I don't know what this other one is. It's like an RPG or something, or a strategy. Ah, shoot, I was just reading about it, and now I can't even think of it. But, Kotaku was gushing about it, just absolutely gushing about it, but... So that's exciting. Double Fine coming out with more games. One that potentially is not backed by Kickstarter. So we will see. That's all my news. Just a quick little tidbits there.
Cool.
Yay.
Woohoo.
All right.
Should I do my indie game?
Yeah.
I played this week, I only played a little bit of it, so I'm going to talk about it shortly, and then I'll talk about something else. I'd never played Amnesia before.
Oh, really?
No way.
You guys talked about it all the time, and I finally got it and played it this week. And I can see why you guys really thought it was cool, but it's just not my style of game, you know? Like the sort of pointy, clicky, puzzly thing, but it was scary.
It's definitely scary.
So I definitely got that. I had not played it before, and I totally see where you guys are coming from that. But as far as
I have yet to find a game that really, really scares me.
Yeah.
Lately, anyway. Like within the last 10 years.
Yeah, because I mean, like Amnesia was definitely really good. As far, I don't know as far as that went, but it was like getting your heart racing scary, not like, oh my right. God, I'm going to go to bed and pee myself. I'm so scared.
I remember being that scared at Resident Evil. What was it? I don't remember. I was pretty young. Resident Evil 2, maybe.
Yeah, that's why I said within the last 10 years. That's been more than 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
But. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, think about the first time, think about back to the Resident Evils. Think about the first time those damn zombie dogs jumped through the window at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was terrifying.
Yep.
That's scary.
Yeah, see?
That was absolutely terrifying.
I haven't had that moment in a long time.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, in news, I want to talk about a couple of things that aren't listed there, and that's because I have to stay awake from Kickstarter. You know, because I go through these Kickstarter periods, right? And I don't know why, but I go in and like certain things just look really good to me. Mm-hmm. So lately I've backed a couple of things on Kickstarter, and I'm only gonna talk about the game things, of course, but I backed Tug, which actually ends tomorrow, the 31st, which is a game that is being developed by kind of a collaboration, cooperation between game devs, game theorists, sociologists, psychologists. So all these people who are coming together to talk a lot professionally about what makes games work. And they're building this game that is going to... make you think about how games work, why games work, and is really going to be dependent on how you play the game.
Hmm.
Right? So, and the name of the game is Tug. It's an RPG-y kind of game. And you'll start as a child and play through as an adult. But it's an open world sandbox RPG. It's already hit its goal. It's got about 18 hours to go. But so if you hear this within the next 18 hours by 4:26 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you can still back it. But it looks like it's really going to be really interesting, and I'm dying to play it. It won't be out until, according to them, where is my, you back this level? I don't know. There it is. No, it's not. Maybe I'm not signed in. I don't know. So you can get, you can get a copy of the game for as little as $10.
Well, that's awesome.
So
is it supposed to be like mostly psychology, or is it?
No, it's an actual RPG.
Okay.
But got all these people that are coming together to work on the mechanics, because they're the ones that think about mechanics and how people play games and why they do certain things in games to build the mechanics. They're not trying to, you know, build like this, you know, psychoevolutionary or, you know, game itself, but, you know, to figure out why people do things and then capitalize on that to make gameplay more fun is what they're trying to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really cool, though, and very, very interesting.
Yeah, so I'm hoping it's as good as I think it's going to be. Only thing that kind of pissed me off about it, of course, you know, it looks like all the people involved in this collaboration were, of course, men.
Shock.
Yeah,
you know, that is shocking, right? Mm-hmm. But I backed it anyway, because I really want to see. The other thing that's game-based that I've backed is this thing. I can't call it a game, but it's a game builder. It's called Pixel Press, Draw Your Own Video Game. It's an app. Right now, they're building it for iOS and possibly Android, depending on how much funding they get. And it's based on, they use kind of this special graph paper. And using their symbols, you draw your own levels for games. And then all you have to do is take a picture of it. There's no coding involved. It builds the levels for you and they're playable. So you build your own platformer by drawing it out on a piece of paper.
That's really cool. I saw you posted about that on Facebook, I think, and I saw that, and that looks really, really sweet.
So I'm really excited about that. And they sent out an email this morning that says they've also listed themselves on Steam Greenlight, because they also plan to, if they can, develop this for Mac and PC as well. So it won't just be an app, but you'll be able to do it on PC as well. So I guess you would draw it out and then take a picture of it and upload it. And make it a playable level on your computer. So that sounds really exciting. And that's got about, you got more than enough time to back this one.
That'd be cool for kids.
Oh yeah. And they were having a contest, and having people kind of draw their own levels without having the app, to see who drew the best level. So that was pretty cool. I'm excited about that one. I want to use that one in the classroom, so I really hope that one comes to fruition. I'm really, you know, I want to get my money's worth, yes, but I also want to use it in the classroom, so I'm anxious for that one to work out. And you got about 14 days left on that one, and it's 3/4 of the way funded already after like 16 days or so. Who knows?
So it'll probably happen.
Yeah, it'll probably happen, because they only kickstarted the project for $100,000 and they're already at like $72,000. So.
Oh wow. Okay.
I'm imagining with 14 days to go, it won't be too hard to get that last $18,000 or $20,000 or whatever it is. We'll see how that works out. So those are those, and then one more thing, and then I'll stop. There's something else that I had just seen earlier today, and I haven't had time. I'm trying not to fund any more Kickstarters this week. But there's a 3D platformer, that is already funded, and it's only been active for 2 days. and they were going for $30,000. After 2 days, they have $42,000. It's called Gears for, it's by the developer Gears for Breakfast, and it's called A Hat in Time. It's a 3D collect-a-thon platformer. And I think that that's, you know, going to be pretty cool. You can back it. You can back it and get the game for as little as $15 or $10. I take that back. No, those are gone. That was the early $15.
Still not bad.
So you can check that one out. It's really cute. It's like a Mario type platformer. But the protagonist in the hat is a girl. And she gets to do all the cool stuff. It's in a magical world. And it's got time travel. And it's a female character. So, yeah, you know, I'm going to end up backing that one, too. Because I got
it. So you're sold. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, okay, I got it.
That's funny.
So, yeah, I thought those were interesting. Not news, not quite news, not quite games, but, you know, in between.
Yeah. Kickstarter.
Kickstarter. Yeah. All right.
It's a new segment.
No, let's not do that. Don't put me in charge of that. I'll be broke. It's like, it's research. I have to look up all the Kickstarter games this week as I fund like 15 of them. So I did see a couple other interesting things that I've but anyway, that's a whole nother story.
We lost the goal here.
A whole nother illness on my part. All right. And now it's time for our issue of the week. And Alex Lane says this week's issue of the week was your idea. Tell us about it. Let's tell the people about it.
Okay, so what we decided to talk about this week is men doing feminism, so to speak. And what we sort of wanted to, the reason why I thought about this is, I've been reading some, feminist methodology books, for my dissertation and some stuff, particularly from social scientists and stuff. Can you guys hear me okay?
You got a little artifact, but I can hear you.
Okay. It sounds crazy from my end. I feel like I'm in Flight of the Navigator, but that's okay. So, anywho, so I was reading this stuff about these social researchers trying to do feminist methodology, and they had a whole section called On Men, and it was on the different types of men and kind of the question or how people have dealt with the question of whether or not men can be feminist. Mm-hmm. Some people say men can't be feminist because they lack women's experience, which is the cornerstone of feminism. Some people say they can be, because you just need sort of a central belief, a central drive to make it better, make things better and more equal for women, right?
Uh-huh.
So it kind of sort of depends on how people are defining feminism, whether they say that men can or can't do it. Certainly they lack the experience. I don't think anyone can argue against that. But when you read articles and stuff by men claiming to be feminists, what sort of reaction do we have to it? I know certainly the biggest argument against it is, well, in industries particularly like gaming, there's so many women that don't get a voice and don't get a chance to speak. It becomes a problem if men are sort of usurping those roles to be able to talk about feminism when women can't even talk about it. I know that there's been tons of articles written by guys, sort of on behalf of women, like, I know they don't have a voice, so I'm going to say all these fucked up things that we need to deal with as an industry, because everybody keeps silencing them or whatever. So, I don't know. I was interested in your guys' view on it, but that's why I proposed this topic.
Well, I think it's an interesting one because this is something that we hear not only when it comes to men doing feminism, but also when folks start talking about whether or not like folks of color can, folks who are not of color can teach, say, you know, minority rhetorics, or whether or not, and it's usually questions about, like, whether or not white folks can teach something ethnic, right? Nobody, well, very few people actually want to ask the question of whether or not somebody black can teach something that is not black, or someone who is ethnic can teach something that is not ethnic in any way. And I think that for me, the way that I always like to address this when we, especially when I'm talking to students, is to go to the theory. And one of the folks that I always go to, because she seems to have such a solid kind of grasp of it, and talks about it in a way that makes perfect sense and kind of goes back to one of the stances that you talked about, Alex, is bell hooks, when she talks about, okay, so there's this difference, right? Is that, yeah, so there, you don't, of course, have the experience, but you can have a passion about thing without having that passion of experience. And it is kind of that passion of empathy, right? Or, and that passion of understanding and the passion of knowledge, right? So being able to understand, to empathize, to talk about a thing in a very kind of real way. But it's not, but having that understanding at the same time that it's not the same thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. In fact, I remember when I was like, when I'm practicing for job interview questions and stuff like that, the answer I always personally think that I'll come to, and it's kind of in my own mind, this is what I come to, and it's that my mentors, which is you, believe that you, your body didn't preclude you from thinking or believing anything. Like, you can believe and be passionate about anything regardless of what your body is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes both ways, for gender and for race studies. And you can certainly never claim experience. And I would hope that people can regulate themselves enough so they're not consciously taking a place from somebody who has that experience. But I certainly don't think having a penis makes you unable to believe in feminist aims.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, having a penis can be problematic.
I certainly think so.
I'm kidding.
A little.
And for folks out there, Nicole's having issues. We've been having issues with Skype all night. Both Alex and I kept having Skype crash on us. And Alex, as she said, her internet has been real wonky.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think we lost.
And Nicole's has been pretty bad too. So she just got bumped. So she's gonna reboot and come back and join in the conversation. But one of the things that you know I want to think about and talk about for a second is, I mean, and it's interesting because, you know, this came up in a dissertation defense that we had here this week, and also something, it was a conversation, the conversation we had with Mike Hoy when he came on and did his interview.
Mm-hmm.
Was, you know,
he's a smart guy.
He's a very smart guy, and I really enjoyed having him on. We've mm-hmm. got to have him back. But so when he came on and he talked about the fact that, you know, when he started getting death threats and all kinds of craziness after hacking Zelda for his daughter, you know, men were shocked that he had mm-hmm. gotten these death threats based on him doing this one little thing that was, you know, meant for his daughter and his daughter only. Right.
Right.
But the women were like, oh yeah, that's going to happen. You know, has anybody threatened to boil your bunny yet? Right. So, you know, they were like, so have these horrible things happened? Oh, well, you're still a lightweight kind of, because they hadn't. Right.
Yep.
But it's that kind of experience, right?
Yep.
It is that difference that we have to, recognize as being a difference, right? So you can be a male feminist or a man and a feminist, right? And but not have that kind of very different lived experience, and that kind of understanding until it comes to you in a different way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and I think, like, the important stuff that I've seen of the people who do that well are that they recognize all of the sort of reasons why they maybe aren't the right person to be talking about this, but because of X, Y, and Z, they're one of the only people who can. Like, well, like, there was an article that someone posted recently about that harassment against women and stuff is not a women's issue. Like, it's a men's issue, mm-hmm. because they're the ones doing the assaulting. So it's not our problem, it's their problem. Which I didn't necessarily agree with, because, not because, like, in principle, but because, like, women's groups that are based around those things are, like, super powerful, I think. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't want to, like, take that away from women. But on the other hand, like that, like, in these situations, like, everybody has a different perspective. And I think it's a good thing when people in positions of power, maybe like a Mike Hoy, will speak out about it, because for, you know, there might be 10 or 50 or 100 men to every one woman who's able to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so those issues will get to a broader audience, and they'll be, you know, become more part of the discourse. So,
I mean, and what we've got to understand, too, when we're starting to talk about who can and can't do a thing.
Right, exactly. Right,
is we've got to understand that being a woman is not a monolithic thing.
Mm-hmm.
We are not all the same kind of woman. We do not all experience the same kind of oppression, because there are all of these other kinds of factors, right, that come in, right? And that's been one of the issues with why feminism has been so fragmented over the years anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, there's feminism that is kind of historically, right, been white middle class feminism,
mm-hmm.
right? And then we've also had Black womanism that's come, yep. out of the feminist movement, and then we've had third wave feminism that seeks to include a broader scope of people. But then at the same time, even when we're doing this, we're still segmenting ourselves, because there are so many different kinds of women who are active in a feminist and or womanist movement,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's impossible to say here's who can and can't do it, because, right. you know, regardless of whether or not you and I and Nicole are all feminists, right?
Mm-hmm.
We will never be the same kind of feminist, right? Because, yeah, my life experience is different. One, because as Nicole pointed out earlier, I'm old as hell. And two, yeah, you're never gonna let that one down. Don't nope. expect to. But also because, you know, two, I'm a Black woman. Three, I'm a lesbian. I mean, we've got all of these different, and regardless of whether or not I want to admit it, I am still an upper middle class academic. Right. So there are all these things that come into play that we have got to say, understand, have a definite effect on what feminism is, feminism or womanism or what have you, is to me. Right. And what I need from feminism and what I have to offer to feminism is always going to be different than what, you know, you guys can, because you're coming from different subject positions.
Well, and you and I have gotten into these arguments. Or it's not even really an argument, it's just discussions about this over and over. Like when we're talking about whether or not we can make our logo pink. And like, pink to me means something very different than what it means to you. Because pink to me is like a signal where, you know, I sort of grew up in an all tomboy, all masculine environment with sports and hunting beavers and whatever they do in Minnesota. And
hunting beavers.
Yeah. And so, like, to me, it was really important to be able to claim those things as femininity and be like, this is just as good as your green logo or your red logo or whatever. The things that are stereotypically female are not necessarily bad. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was an important angle for me to come from, where I think, Sam, you came from a different, very different angle about that, because your experience was more women had to wear pink and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
You know, it's more of a... It's more confining than it is liberating.
Right.
Right? Right.
When you see this come up when like people write posts and blogs and stuff about how they're treated at feminist conferences. So, like, a woman will go and she'll wear a polka dot dress and high heels and lipstick, and the feminist will sit in the corner and trash talk her. And she's like, I'm very feminist. I do all of this stuff for women, and my whole career is dedicated to helping women. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And but to them, she's demeaning their progress by showing legs and showing, like, cleavage and stuff like that.
And that's to say some feminist conferences, right? Because, I mean, but you'll always have those people who...
I guess I was thinking not even feminist conferences, but, like, conferences that women hold such a minority that they've had to fight to get where they were, I think is where the example that I was talking about was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a small group of women and they had to fight really hard to be there. So when women came in dressed like this, they, you know, anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, I have nothing against women who wear high heels and makeup. Nothing at all. I don't ever want my daughter to wear high heels because they're bad for you physically.
Is why. Yeah, it's terrible.
And it's pretty bad because I started calling them stupid shoes a lot earlier in life, right? So, yeah, now she has a bad habit of when we're out and she sees a woman wearing heels, she goes, Mama, she's got on stupid shoes.
Oops.
Like, oops, my bad. They are stupid shoes. But I'm sorry she said that out loud, embarrassed you.
Whoops, that's so funny.
Yo, she's got on stupid shoes.
She's got stupid shoes.
I know.
That's funny. I don't know if this is, like, totally from left field here, but, like, you were talking about kind of a little bit ago, Alex, with kind of men in a position to be able to say these things. And you brought up Mike Hoy. That made me think, though, and I don't know, I'll just say it. Is he in this mindset, do you think? Because the reason why he brought it up quite a bit is because of his daughter and how he's looking out for his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think that, and not saying just him, but men who kind of get in that mindset, like they have to protect their daughters, you know what I mean? Like
daughters and friends and wives in the industry. I think that's where most of these articles and stuff come from.
Right. Because they have a woman in their life that they feel they need to protect. Like, doesn't that kind of, not in a way, cancel it out, but
do you get what
I'm saying here?
I see, like, what you're saying.
Well, in my mind, it's sort of like progression. So I would rather...
Or evolution. I'm joking. I'm joking.
Certainly not evolution. But like things aren't going to get better tomorrow and be perfect. They're never going to be perfect, right? So we need to take steps. And if the next step is protection rather than assault, like, I would rather fight against protection tomorrow, like, you know, guys being chauvinistic and masculine in that way than being sexually assaulted tomorrow. Like, I would rather do that. So if that's like, and certainly it's not great and it's damaging in many other ways, but I think when it comes down to, like, the actual physical assault, the death threats, like, I want that next step, even if it's not perfect, but it's a place to go for now. But maybe you guys disagree.
Okay, here's a really weird real world example. So a couple years ago when we got 27 inches of snow, I don't think you guys were living here when we got that crazy amount of snow. But we got 27 inches of snow all in one time. And all the roads were closed. And literally when I opened my garage door so that I could go out and shovel snow, between the 27 inches of snow that had fallen and the drifting, there was 1 inch of daylight that came through my garage door when the garage door was completely open. And it was so thick on one side that it didn't even cave in when I opened the door because it was a wall of snow. Mm. Right? The only way I could get out was going through the back of my house because the snow had drifted and, like, covered everything in the front of my house. Now, we had at that time, we live in a cul-de-sac, and it's a great cul-de-sac. People work well together. You know, it's kind of a community in and of itself. But two men in our cul-de-sac came out with their snow blowers and cleared our snow. Now, we're two women living alone in this house, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't have a snow blower. I was going to try to shovel it, right? So, and they knew we didn't have a snow blower. And one of them was just this sweet older guy that I absolutely love. This other one was like the world's biggest male chauvinist pig that I'm pretty sure he literally kept his wife chained to the kitchen. Because he was just that kind of guy. And I was so pissed that he cleared my snow. And I was so happy that the other guy did, because I really needed my snow cleared. And people couldn't even get through. I couldn't even pay anybody to clear it because the roads were closed and the police had closed the roads and said, look, there's no traffic. You guys can't, no driving. Right. But it was the guy who I was pretty sure had his wife chained to the kitchen. I was so pissed that he cleared our snow because I was like, I can just see him standing over there saying, oh, we got to go clear that snow for those little ladies because they can't do it themselves.
So it's not necessarily the act. It's like the intention.
Right.
And how they act all of the time, not this one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I've been in situations like that before. And what I was going to say, which you beat me to, it was for one guy, it wasn't the male-female thing. It was that he had a snowblower and you don't.
Right.
Like, I think about that right. all the time. Sometimes right. I fell into gender roles. Like, I'm not a very good house anything.
No.
It's terrible. And Mike asked me to do laundry because he's going on a trip, right? And none of his clothes were clean. And he had to work at 5:30 this morning to 5:30 tonight. And I didn't have to go anywhere. And, so, you know, so I was telling Jeremy that I was going to be late to our meeting because I had to do laundry. And he's like, oh, you do laundry? Well, he went to work. Classic. I was like, well, I don't think that's what was really happening, because it was more of a you have time, I don't situation, right? And it's certainly not a trend. However, if it was a trend, that would definitely be problematic.
If it wasn't for the fact that he usually does all your laundry and cooks your food and cleans up after you because you can't do any of that stuff.
Takes care of the dog.
Right. Oh my God, that's so funny.
Certainly. I've been trying to be a little better.
And I think that most of that is because he doesn't want to be poisoned by your cooking. And I can understand that.
That is absolutely the impetus behind it. I'm terrible at most things, so he just does them.
That's so funny. I thought you were on a cooking kick. Thought there was cooking going on in your life.
I cook sometimes. I cook for our poker games, but usually I do like snacky foods and stuff.
You know, that's funny that you say that too, though, because my first like disclaimer when starting a new guy is I'm not domestic at all. Like, that's what I tell them. Like, if you're expecting some girl to be domesticated for you, that's not me. So just move on to the next one.
That's fair.
It's funny. But I think also, like you were saying, that is a good point that the protection is a step in a positive direction rather than, you know, the rape and death threats.
Obviously, and it depends on where you are. Like, if it's your right. neighbor, like this neighbor guy, that is not a step in the right direction. But for a majority of the women facing these problems in the gaming industry, I think that's, you know.
And you know what? And this is another perfect example of how things differ based on your various subject positions in discourse communities. Because in the heterosexual community, the fact that I am fiercely protective of those who are younger than, less powerful than, more vulnerable than myself gets seen as mothering, because that's the way the heterosexual community understands it. Mm-hmm. In the queer community, especially the Black queer community, the same behavior gets interpreted as Black lesbian masculinity.
Interesting. Really? 'Cause you need to control and have power over?
Well, not all masculinity is controlling, Alex Lane.
Well, said in that manner, it seemed like it, but go ahead.
But no, it's protective. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in that way, you're taking on the male role of being the protector of the family. Yeah.
Exactly. And see, that's what I'm saying, is that it's impossible to say who can and can't do something, because the same person doing the same actions is going to be read by different people completely differently.
And that's why, like, I think it's great to include women on projects and great to include as much diversity as possible. But you are never going to be like, okay, this is feminist approved. It's fine now.
You know, feminist approved. Can you get us a little stamp?
Yeah. Yeah. Like a Krista Charter, right? Like she had us read some stuff and comment on it and give her feedback. And hopefully it's better, for most people, but it's certainly not going to please everyone. There's going to be people who come from a different position and they're going to think it's offensive, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Very true. So then do you think that there is a way to say, well, that a male can a man truly be a feminist?
It depends on your definition of feminism, I think.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely see that, but I guess if we're being super, because then it makes me think, like, there's always some sort of not backhanded, but there's always some sort of, like, you know, underlying reason for it. Like a daughter or a loved one. You know what I mean? And to that extent,
maybe they were just raised well.
That could totally be it. That could totally be it.
Maybe they were just raised well. That's what I want to think. I mean, and that's a possibility too, is you have, you know, a man who recognizes the worth of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. It's hard to find.
Or recognizes that the worth of the woman doesn't need to be recognized by them because they're their own person, right? You don't need to be judged by males as worthy or not.
That too.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how you want to look at it.
Or like saying you don't get it is when you really get it. Like, yeah. that's what the section in the book ultimately came to, was men who really understand what feminism is all about will do all of the things that, to support feminism, stuff like that, but never call themselves a feminist because they get it the most.
Because they're not being feminist, they're just being human fucking beings.
Right, they're being human beings. And they might use feminist methodology, but they would never call themselves that because they understand feminism too well. So.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to even call myself a feminist.
Go on.
Well, I don't even really, because before doing this podcast with you guys, I never would have sat down and been like, yeah, I'm a feminist. Because if anything, like, prior to this, it would leave almost like a bad taste in my mouth saying that about myself.
Yeah, I think that's really common, yeah.
Yeah,
and I think that's because you're of a certain age as well.
Right, definitely that. But, and then, you know, the more I thought about it for myself, though, it's like, you know, in a lot of ways, I am a feminist without sitting down and being like, yeah, feminism rocks, like, vaginas rule, stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I think that's
like
a, I think
having that's a, an awareness of it without sitting down and having to be on the picket fence and, like, you know what I mean? Like, I never put myself out there to be like, yeah, I'm a feminist. And even now when people ask, like, you know, what's the podcast about? I'm like, it's like games and gaming from a feminist perspective. I always say that. And I'll be like, oh, so you're one of those feminist women? And I'm like, well, yeah, but I don't advertise myself like that. I don't walk around like, ooh, I got my panties in a bunch. I'm a feminist.
Right.
Because that's how they say it to me, even.
Yeah,
oh, you're one of those feminists.
It's like, don't get your panties in a bunch.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm going to start freaking out because they're male and they exist and I'm a feminist.
And I think that's really common with people your-ish age.
Your-ish age.
Because it's a... Well, that's a thing I've been reading a couple articles too lately that's been talking about the gender lines with the generation right now are just not there as much. So like with kids in school, like they're trying to not make them choose like male or female on any of their tests and stuff like that because those sorts of things just don't exist for them, you know, mm-hmm. like as much. It's not as powerful. Then people aren't forcing them into roles and.
You know what? You people want to think that. And I don't see that. Having a child in pre-K, she won't let you say preschool. It's got to be pre-K, right? Because she's getting ready to go to kindergarten.
Oh, that's funny.
yeah. And being in an academic community, right? Even though we're in the middle of central fucking Indiana, mm-hmm. you know, we are, the people who work here are not from central Indiana. So, I mean, they're a more diverse population, geographically, economically, not so much racially, but a little bit. There's still so much closed-mindedness when it comes to gender roles. I mean, people who get pissed because their sons are, you know, wearing dresses while they're playing dress up. You know, people who are telling their kids crazy shit like, you know, oh, everybody who has a tattoo has been to prison.
But that's the parents. Like, you see the kid's putting on a dress, right?
But the kids are reflecting that because that's what they're hearing. That's you know what true. I mean?
Yeah.
I certainly have no experience to speak to this, but I think, at least from the few, like, three articles that I've been seeing lately, is the kids coming out of this generation are much less wedded to those than the previous one. So while you,
okay,
well, I'm sure
and
you
I will,
see
I will
it.
Agree that they're much less wedded than previous generations, but it's not gone in any way, shape, or form.
Certainly
I mean,
not.
Even in what
gone.
We would consider more enlightened communities. And that is what is shocking to me. Every time I hear some crazy backwater ass shit coming out of these, you know, from these kids, and it's clearly what they've heard at home, mm-hmm. right? I am absolutely appalled. And I'm like, really? Really? And these are supposed to be educated people.
Yep.
And that's shocking. You know, and the number of kids that I see, the number of girls that I see that are still pushing the hell out of pink, right? And I know there's nothing wrong with it because my kid pushes the hell out of pink.
Yeah, calm down on pink there.
But then at the same time, my kid didn't like pink before she started preschool.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. I remember you telling me that because we sat down and had a conversation about how much I hate pink.
She did not like pink. She was all about jewel tones. Everything my child owned and would wear was red, blue, or purple until she started preschool. And it was only when every other little girl in that room was wearing pink that she started to wear pink and ask for it. So, I mean, there is a lot to be said for nurture. Even when it's not so fucking nurturing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if I could go back 2.5 years, I may have never put her in preschool.
No way.
I don't know. Maybe I just would have...
She's going to see it eventually. Make up her own mind. Hopefully you just taught her well enough that she'll decide next year, like, yeah, it's not for me. I went through it. I don't like it. Or whatever.
Or maybe I would have followed my first sucks. Mind and not let people like Alex Lane talk me out of her and told her that not only were high heels stupid shoes, but pink was from the devil.
Yeah, and she wanted a kitchen, and Sam didn't want to get her a kitchen.
I got her the kitchen.
And then eventually did, because she realized it wasn't because everyone else wanted one, it was because that's where mommy always is.
Right. She wanted to cook like me.
Aww, that's adorable.
The kitchen was more acceptable to me when I figured that one out.
That's
she's a
really
smart kid.
She is a smart kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good issue.
I was always told to wear pink.
Really?
Am I still here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I mean, I was always told to wear, like, pink and stuff. I mean, wear pink, wear dresses, do all the cutesy girly things. And they still, to this day, like, they make fun of me. Like, whenever they buy me some, like, clothes for Christmas or whatever, don't let it be pink, because Nicole hates pink. Don't buy Nicole pink. Nicole doesn't like pink.
That's so funny.
Oh, gosh.
It's too much of a... girly color for Nicole.
I like never had pink or dresses or Barbies. I like played with horses and denim overalls.
Well, you know what? My mother harassed the shit out of me to wear makeup.
Oh. Really?
Oh, yeah. She really did. She harassed the shit out of me to wear makeup. That's okay, Mom.
Yeah.
I forgive you.
that's a generational thing, though. I feel like her generation, makeup was like, you know, a godsend.
She's calling you old again, by the way.
I am not. I was just talking about her mother.
Mm-hmm. I know, Alex. I hear it.
You hear it. Good.
Damn
good.
It. I'm in the doghouse. Can't get out of it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look all cute and beg in a corner. Yeah, exactly.
I know what she's talking about.
I'll put on a pink hat.
And sit in a corner.
You're born in the 1800s, man. That's just how it was.
I know. You know, that's how women of your mother's generation in the 1840s.
Oh, my God.
But I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about your mother.
Because they hadn't made blush yet.
Oh, man. Well, that's good. Now I'm an ageist. Is there a word for
absolutely.
That?
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Ageist is a thing.
Yep. I'm an ageist. How did this happen?
Okay, we're gonna let it ride to that one, okay?
Yeah, you're fine. You're
for
fine.
Now, anyway. Till next
time. All right. Till next time.
All right. How about some deals for broke-ass gamers to save Nicole's ass here?
Get me out of the hole I've dug.
Well, there have been some pretty good ones. You know, we're coming up on the Steam summer sale.
Thank God.
Oh my gosh, I'm so waiting for that. But so Steam's been running lots of other sales, like their week-long sales and their weekend sales and such. There have been some pretty good ones. Steam is running week-long deals right now that actually are still running. But some of the highlights of that one are you can get Greed for $1.24. Popo and Yo that I talked about on the blog and probably talked about here too. For $9.99. You can get The Guild 2 for $2.49. Angry Birds Space for $1.69. Payday the Heist, because Payday 2 is coming out soon, for $5. And then today, the Alan Wake games are on sale. So you get, not just today, the sale hit today. You can get the original Alan Wake for $3. Alan Wake's American Nightmare for $1.50, or the franchise, which will give you both games for $4, and then get all the collector's edition extras for another $1. So for $5, you can get all the Alan Wake you can take. So there's lots of stuff on sale at Steam to check out as you wait for the Steam summer sale to hit and lose your mind. Or is that just me? Amazon's also running a sale on kind of the two biggest games that have come out lately that I think we all played and talked about a lot. BioShock Infinite for $39.99 and Tomb Raider for $33.30. And GameStop has a little special going on that they had $20 off some good games like SimCity. Well, let me take that back. Good games like Ni No Kuni for $39.99, or you could get SimCity for $39.99. Or you could buy Dead Island Riptide for $39.99 and get the Game of the Year edition of Dead Island for $9.99. So.
Looks dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some games you can pick up on the cheap and play while you're waiting for Animal Crossing to come out next week. Mm-hmm. Or The Last of Us comes out next week too, doesn't it?
Oh, yay!
Yeah, it does. It looks so good.
And Remember Me? Let's look at those dates. Because I'm crazy now. Yeah, so The Last of Us comes out next Tuesday. I want to say Remember Me comes out next week, doesn't it?
I don't remember.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that wasn't funny.
No. I don't care. I stand by it.
It's so funny.
Sorry. And Animal Crossing. So yeah, I'm really dying to play a couple of them. The Last of Us and Animal Crossing and The Last of Us. I want to play. I don't know if I want to buy The Last of Us. I don't know how I feel about this game yet. It's kind of strange. But yeah, Remember Me comes out next week too, June 4th. And Remember Me is PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. Animal Crossing is for the 3DS. And The Last of Us is a PS3 exclusive. Oh, and it doesn't come out until the 14th. I'm sorry. So it's a week after next for The Last of Us. Sorry, I jumped the gun on that one. I had to double check the data. That's why it was driving me kind of crazy. Sorry, I had to look it up. So 2 weeks for The Last of Us, a week for Remember Me and Animal Crossing. But Remember Me and Animal Crossing is enough, definitely enough to keep you busy until The Last of Us comes out. And Remember Me actually has a female protagonist as well.
Yep.
All kinds of fun stuff. Mm-hmm. It's credit cards ready.
Heck yeah.
Yep. Blow the dust off those puppies. It's time to buy more games.
Like there was ever dust on that card.
Oh. All right. So I think that's about it, folks.
Yeah.
And we made it through with only losing one person once.
Woohoo!
If you heard my recording, though, it's crazy. I can't hear anything you guys are saying.
Between that and the dogs, probably couldn't hear a damn thing.
I know, they're crazy.
Yep, that's funny.
All right, so until next time, folks. Stay cool. Play Animal Crossing. Mm-hmm. And as always, game on.
Game on.
Game on.
Yay, us.